you still there, Jackie?
Yep. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Hey, this is Bill Mayer. I had a question on, and we've looked at that strategy you're talking about on the Minneapolis contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Have you actually followed through? We did a little bit of that on corn last year, and it worked real well. But have you done some like on soybeans?
Yes.
It looks to me like I didn't really see much open interest in any of the contracts. Maybe I'm looking the wrong place.
They don't report very well. I can tell you that much. That was one of the things that one of the fellows from Minneapolis Grain Exchange came in and actually sat down and talked with us probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I asked him that. I said, why aren't we seeing any open interest out there? And he said, it's just a reporting situation more than anything. And they did lose a lot of open interest. You know, I was using it too. And then when it became rather unviable, I said, I'm not going to keep doing this. I can get in, but I can't get out. You know, well, now they brought in, they have guaranteed market makers.
Yeah.
So we know that we can get in and get out. And, I mean, yeah, it would have been a good thing to do, right, last week Friday. You know, I didn't think about it.
Well, it could still be a good thing to do if you want to own the cash against the futures.
Yep.
And you have to sell cash grain.
That's exactly right. That's why I think, you know, it could be. And when you look at what it did, you know, from last week Friday, on, you know, through this week, it very much reflected what went on out in the country.
Right. Well, it should, because it's based on the index. Huh?
Well, yeah, except that, you know, it just depends upon where you are and how close. For you guys, it especially would be close, I would think. You know, but when you look outside of that. I did some research today just for some information. I never have time to explain it all when we're on the air anyway. But
well, we'll probably use this in the webcast, so go ahead and tell us about it.
Well, what I did was I sat down and actually had my intern run up all the information, and we looked at all producing states that the USDA listed on the June 30th acreage report. We looked at what their average harvested acres were over the last 6 years, 2001 through 2006, and then took their average yields over those years. I used 2001 through 2006 because I wanted to represent the newer corn products. You know, we always talk about technology,
right,
and I felt that that was a good representation. It was very interesting. When we took it and got down to the bottom line, it basically said that out of 92.8 million acres, if we would have average, you know, harvest acres, we'd harvest about 84 million acres, a little over 84 million acres. If we use the averages, the average yields over all of those states for the last 6 years, basically we would come in with a hair over a 12 billion bushel crop, not quite 12.1. If you just take the last 3 years, which were our record years, you know, 160.4, 148, 149.1, we come in at a 12.822, which, you know...
What's that equal, like an average yield, then?
The average yield comes in at... doggone, you had to ask me.
Like 148, 149?
I'll give it to you in just a second here. I'm sorry, I had just... I looked at that just before, and then I didn't...
No, she's doing that. Does anybody recall what the, I think the USDA's 150?
152.5 on the 3-year average, okay, and on the 6-year average, it would come.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of.
6-year average? Sorry about that.
USDA's harvested acreage last time was at 84.5, correct?
85.4.
85.4.
Yeah,
85.4. You know,
right.
That's typical for me.
You know, yeah, well, that's me too at times, you know, so it's, and it comes in at 143.7 on the 6-year average. Now, the other thing I want to do on this is I want to, this next week, I want to look basically at, where the particular crop ratings, where the individual states are crop rating wise, and when they were at that level in the last 6 years, if they were at that level, basically, what it might project out. But I thought it was interesting because, you know, when you look at WASDE's numbers at 12.838, it pretty much backs up what they're saying. It doesn't back up the 13.5s and the 14s that we hear out here in the craziness, you know, in general. And so,
Jackie, Tom, man, you're mentioning crop ratings. We did this big study on crop ratings versus yield, and they don't hold water.
No,
I mean, it's just a mark on a page is all it is.
Well, I've had a lot of contact with the USDA, especially this year, a lot of pretty interesting conversations. And there really is, you know, that there is a form that they send out to people, and they have a lot of reporters from every state. But those reporters, basically, it's, you know, what is the percentage of good to excellent in your area?
Well, and the ones that don't report, then they tweak for it. I mean, they've got a formula for the percentage of returns they get on those things too.
That's exactly correct. And so I don't really feel that they're a guideline, and they're what the trade looks at. That's the only thing that I basically was looking at from that side of it. I have found that growing degree days work the best out of everything that there is.
I think the direction of the ratings can tell you something, but
mm-hmm.
the level is, I agree with Tom, they're kind of worthless.
Well, they are, and you know, it's a difficult situation for us to try and help people understand, you know, that these are the, whether the market is right or the market is wrong, the market's always right until we get to the end, you know, and these swings are just a killer. I wanted to address that KC versus Chicago Wheat question
mm-hmm.
that you had before.
Right.
Okay. What I've been able to root out of the people that I know from KC and places like that is, they're telling me that the majority of the processors of hard red wheat are actually buying in the Chicago wheat market because of liquidity, and it gives them the ability to sell in the KC market, which holds down KC and props up Chicago.
I had heard the same thing. I just wondered if you'd bring it up.
Yep. So, you know, and so, which is pretty smart sense in a lot of ways.
Really? Yep.
So, yeah, it's just plain interesting when you look at the big picture. The question out there is, you know, I'd like to ask you guys a question. Tell me how much of an impact you think the heat had as far as cob size and row, you know, the row structure on your corn when you were going through all the stress at that point in time may play. I mean, what have you seen in the field?
I personally think very little in the area that we're at. I mean, I think in our area we're looking at pretty much record yields here.
We were in a stressed area there where I live, and essentially we went from the middle of May through the entire month of June with maybe less than a half inch. Stuff rolled up real tight. I think everybody's of the opinion we took 10% off the top end of it. I guess that remains to be seen. So we've gotten where I live now about 11 inches in the last 3 weeks. So.
Where are you at, Tom?
Tuscola.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was talking about north of Bloomington.
You're north of Bloomington?
Yeah, okay. in the real good dirt.
In the real good dirt.
We get an inch and a half every Friday afternoon.
I guess order it up.
Oh, that sounds good.
They've got a good church system there.
Well,
we found we cover a large area through base commodities there, and what we found, guys are actually going out and checking now,
mm-hmm.
and they're shocked. They were looking for 220. They're in the 180 bushel area, mm-hmm. and they've been receiving the rains.
Yeah.
It's just the heat and the dryness hit the stage, like you mentioned there, during that ear-determining stage.
Well, that's the thing, you know, of course, that the trade is not looking at all. And it's really difficult when they ride the train in and out, you know, seeing nothing but tremendous-looking corn. It's hard for them to believe it's any different. Now, we have clients all over the place, too. And it's been very interesting. We've heard some really strange phenomena this year, you know. Now, just as a matter of fact, I have some Iowa people. They have no idea why it's happened, but they have a cob and they have silks, but they don't have tassels. They don't know if it was chemical interaction. They don't have any idea. Today, I had a call from a very good producer up in the Minnesota area, and he's in one of the areas that was really lush, you know, at the beginning and very, very nice. And his agronomist was out today. They figure right now they're taking about 4 bushels a day off their yield. His agronomist said, "We don't have rain by the end of next week, you're pretty much toast here." And that's more widespread than you might think. I've said from the beginning, I thought you were gonna take back the crown this year as far as the yield averages, because you did have the drier weather, which sent your roots deeper. Yeah. And in contrast to Iowa.
Well, you got to keep in mind Minnesota. We're hearing the same thing. We've got producers in Minnesota we work with. And you look on how big a state a producer Minnesota is, that's huge.
That is. It's absolutely gigantic. I mean, when you're looking at them with only, you know, and again, we have to look at crop ratings, but you're looking at 50% good to excellent. That's pretty miserable when you think of where they started from. And we've got a lot of good clients up there who are reliable guys in terms of the their guesses that they make. And they're pretty upset at this point in time. And, you know, we're getting to a stage here where, you know, I was disgusted with the market this week. You know, we came in on Monday and said we had 56% in silking, you know, 6% in the dough stage. And they more or less said, who cares? You know, we don't care. And we're behind, you know, on the crop in some areas yet in the United States. I mean, we're not all caught up and we're not all perfect here, but they act as if the whole crop is made. We don't care. You know, and so it's very frustrating. It's frustrating. I probably spent more time doing psychological counseling this week than I've done, than I did anything else, you know.
But wasn't this week as much about being overbought as it was the fundamentals in the market, I think. I mean, I think we just were, you know, the people that came in there and bought the week before there on the dry weather scenario, they weren't very strong longs in the market, it didn't look to me like.
Well, it could be. It could be profit-taking. I'm kicking myself, I'll tell you right now, because I have observed that in the last 3 years that when we take the July bean contract off, we smash the August contract no matter what the weather is, no matter what the trend is. I broke my own cardinal rule, and I did not sell beans on Friday. I told guys to do puts like crazy, but I couldn't get anybody to do anything. Nobody would sell any beans, not in the cash or in the, you know, on the board. And I thought, well, you know, maybe this will be okay for everybody because they've widened basis so much already. So this year they're going to do it in basis because, you know, they stopped getting beans from South America. South America, when I was down in South America 2 years ago, they don't ship any beans after the 1st of September. They'd like to be done by the 1st of August. So they got to come back to the U.S. now to buy a lot of beans. And so I've seen this the last 3 years in a row. All of a sudden Monday comes in and we're down 50 cents and if you followed the electronics and you watched it, I have market depth on my computer here where I can see the electronics just like what's playing on the floor. And the smashing came in on the electronics. It came in for where you can be very anonymous. You know, and it was just astounding to watch. You know, I don't think in general, if they would have had been visible in the, you know, in the pit, we would have seen anything like we saw on Monday.
I think that's what Tommy Schuff told us the last time he was on. He's a floor trader, and he said that ability for them to get in and not have people know who it is has made a huge difference in what happens in the marketplace in the E-Trade during the daytime.
Absolutely. It's frustrating. You know, you can see it, but you can't really tell what's going on. So.
I want to come back with just one final note for the uninitiated. Tell me a little bit more, and I think the rest of these guys may get up and walk out, but maybe they'll stay with us. Tell me a little bit more about these basis contracts in the Minneapolis Grain Exchange.
Well, they have what they call the index contracts, okay, and they basically survey. It depends upon which contract it is, but at least a couple thousand different places, different elevators in the United States. And so, you know, this isn't going to reflect perfectly with your local basis necessarily, but it gives you, you know, a U.S. average is what it does. And so it gives you the ability to be able to go in and either buy or sell that contract, you know, to try and protect yourself from a basis standpoint. You can look at them at mge.com, you know, MinneapolisGrainExchange.com. And anybody can do them. They've got the contracts are available, but it was something that was launched a few years ago and really didn't do well because we just couldn't get liquidity in the market. So they've gone out and they've gotten what we call market makers. In other words, it guarantees me if I get a client into a position that I can get them out of a position without being taken to the cleaners. And so, I see it as something that it could just become one of the most valuable tools we've seen in a long time.
Okay.
Anything else, Todd, that you wanted to... Did I cover everything I should have on that?
As far as I know, I think you've got it all covered. Yeah. Bill,
okay.
What do you think?
I think so. I guess one thing we didn't talk much about was on the demand side on the old crop corn. To me, I've got some questions on why we lowered exports on the last supply-demand and, you know, why we're projecting feed use as low as we are on the 0708, but, you know,
yeah.
We can always argue with their numbers, I guess.
Well, we just got a cattle on feed, you know, report today that shows that the cattle numbers are there. I'm not certain why. And, you know, one of the things that I think that probably frustrated me the most this week was the fact that you looked at the American dollar put in new contract lows.
Yeah.
Well, and look at June hogs for next year. I mean, you could lock in some $58 live hogs.
Absolutely.
With put options.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I can't see why anybody would not want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just think that it's good business sense is what it is.
It works with 290 corn.
Right, and, you know, on the cattle side of it, you know, if you follow the cattle crush at all, which is, you know, what the large feedlots use, you know, bringing in the 750-pound animal, taking them out at 1250, basically putting on 500 pounds, you look at August, September, October, November, those 4 months with where corn is right now today are not going to discourage anybody from buying feeder cattle because they can lock by using the crush when you've got $98 cattle in the deferreds. You know, they can lock in $150 a head or more. You know, so why are we going to lose cattle feeding? This isn't when cattle were 68 cents a head like they were the last time we had this kind of corn.
Maybe it's just telling us that it's all going to be DDGs fed instead of corn.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of it.
Well, you know, I don't know if you know my background, but my background, I have the equivalent of a master's in nutrition. That's what I did for 16 years in the country, working with cattle. And dairies and all of that type of thing. And anybody who thinks that DDGs are going to finish cattle are living in dreamland. Because DDGs carry energy, but they are not fed. They're a competitor for soy meal. They're not a competitor for corn. And I can tell you that it won't take long for a cattle raiser. He'll feed DDGs for a while because they look cheap. But when you have a rear end on the back end of that cattle that looks like a heifer standing in a yard and you're not getting paid well for it, you're not going to keep feeding DDGs. My big feedlots that I talk to basically have said, kiss DDGs off. They've all tried them. They haven't got an interest in it. I think the market for DDGs is probably more in the dairy side of things.
That's interesting.
We appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks, Jackie.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks, Jackie. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.